Black Rifle Coffee. I'm gonna actually need more coffee. No, I mean not need more beans. I'm gonna need like another cup of coffee. I don't know what I had this morning, but I think it like put hair on my chest. It was so caffeinated. I think it was one of the hardcore roasts. They have really good blends, really good roasts over at Black Rifle Coffee. It is the coffee that I love, and it's the coffee I have every single day. I gotta be careful with my caffeine intake. I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm a little wired. Mostly it's just naturally. So I gotta be careful with how much caffeine I have. Black Rifle Coffee. They have the best coffee out there. They also have ready-to-drink coffees if you're in a rush or if you're on the go. And here's the cool thing about the ready-to-drink coffee. Every purchase you make of it, they're raising $1 million to benefit veterans through the Boot Campaign. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the nation. They have all of these individualized programs that treat the root causes of the invisible wounds of war. Everybody knows somebody who's gone and has fought in combat, served their country, and these guys deal with a lot when they come back. You got post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury, chronic pain, self-medication, insomnia. And so the Boot Campaign is designed to show gratitude to our nation's vets and provide this very customized care to treat these. And they're very successful at it. And of course, Black Rifle Coffee is proud to partner with them, veteran-owned coffee company that employs veterans and active duty. And so every can of that ready-to-drink coffee you buy goes to that $1 million donation to the Boot Campaign. You can order online. You can purchase it as part of the coffee club. The coffee club is awesome because you choose your roast frequency of shipment and it's put right on your doorstep. Free shipping. You never run out. Black Rifle Coffee is committed to serving the veteran community. With your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together. Keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of vets and their families. It's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
And so today, I am proud to announce the Biden-Harris administration will develop our nation's first national strategy to counter Islamophobia. This strategy will be a comprehensive and detailed plan to protect Muslims and those perceived to be Muslim from hate, bigotry, and violence, and to address the concern that some government policies may discriminate against Muslims. For example, the so-called Muslim ban, which President Biden revoked on our first day in office. So here's the bottom line. In America, no one should be made to fight hate alone. And in this moment, then, let us all clearly say, a harm against any one of us is a harm against all of us.
Did she mistake Islamophobia for anti-Semitism? Because I know she struggles with words normally. So this is why I ask this. You know, I'm trying to be generous with my reasoning here, which might be a fool's errand. But does she, what the hell is she talking about? Because this is, I mean, we haven't seen an increase in attacks on Muslims, but we sure as hell have seen an increase on attacks against Jewish Americans. I mean, just this is just in America. I'm not even talking about worldwide. Welcome to the show. Dana Lash here with you. That's what we're going to start with today because they announced this initiative. And I have a lot of questions, as I'm sure you all do. I was reading it. They were alluding to it in the press release. Karine Jean-Pierre, they had been alluding to it prior. And she had taken questions on it. I think it was just, the other day. And I just don't get it. I mean, I don't get it. Why we don't need anything like that, because the issue isn't with that. Why can't Jewish people just, you know, why do you have to sit here and tack Islamophobia onto it? Is it a way to excuse I'm just trying to figure out. Why do it like that? Any ideas, Kane? Why?
I suspect they're scared.
Of what?
Of the beheadings.
Well, you know what? I have a theory. Where's this at? Let me pull this up. I do have a theory. My theory. Let me pull this up. Bear with me, because I was actually waiting to the bottom of this hour, and I was going to dive into this new survey about Biden and Muslim Americans. So the story that came out is that he's apparently losing support with the Arab community. I don't know if you saw this. So this was one of the headlines. They said that he is actually losing some support, that they're hemorrhaging it. And they're, I think it maybe go, what was it, like 2% of the population. Stunning drop in Arab American support. This is what Time Magazine reported. I included this. If you get the email newsletter, you get this in your prep. But this is what they had in there. They were saying that here Israel's the one that's attacked, and Arab Americans are slamming Biden. This is what Time is saying. They said that in the U.S., and I don't say the word Palestinian because it's a made up ethnicity and a made up people. And I don't, just as I don't believe in cutting off a man's schlong makes him a woman, I don't believe in conjuring an entire a race out of the ether. So you have people who are sympathetic to West Bank and Gaza territories, and Arab Americans have expressed outrage over, this is Time Magazine, over Biden's response to Israel's bombardment of Gaza. You know, Israel was just sitting there on its ass and decided that they were just going to start bombing Gaza for no reason. Let's forget everything that led up to this, okay? And so it's the first national poll of Arab Americans since they go the war in Gaza. Time is absolute trash. Could I just read Time Magazine? Is absolute. I mean, if Hitler ran a publication, National Poll of Arab Americans, since the war in Gaza, since Hamas decided to launch an attack on Israel, and it shows how deep the sense of betrayal goes. What betrayal? Only 17% of Arab Americans voting said they'll vote for, but who cares? A staggering drop from 59% 2020. Why? Because he doesn't go out there and say Heil Hitler? Is that why? I'm done. Let me do something very unusual. Let's pause this right now. I feel like I got to fill everybody's gas tank for a moment before we continue. And let me explain. I had an event that I was at a dinner with Patriot Mobile last night. And I got to be honest with you, and maybe you can tell, some days this news cycle really grinds on you. When you live this day in and day out, and you see this day in and day out, and you hear from people all over the country what they are experiencing, whether they're Jewish students or Jewish families. And when you see this day in and day out, and this is after 10 years of doing this day in and day out, it is, and I'm a little bit different in that I'm not a commentator that has people write all my stuff and do all my research and do all the work for me. And I show up and I look pretty and I smile at the camera and I just repeat everything I'm given. That's about 80% of people in television and radio. We are not those people. And I got my start in street activism, literally. And after, you know, a decade, it really wears on you. And I like to joke, I mean, Mark Levin is a friend and Glenn Beck is a friend. And I was actually talking to Glenn last night. And I'm like, I love not leaving my house. I love not going to D.C. I can't tell you how many invitations I turned down from this or that. People have said, we would like to give you an award. And I'm like, for what? And I stay home. I'm like, I don't need an award. Go spend your time or your money on something, you know, a little bit more productive. I don't need anything. And I literally have to be coaxed, and Kane can attest to this, coaxed out of my hobbit hole. Because the longer you're in it and the longer you're exposed to this stuff, it does, the news cycle becomes a grind. And you really take, and this is why I think that live radio and live television are very important, because you can feel the audience out there and you really get a lot of encouragement from the audience and you get a lot of energy from the audience. And you guys out there may not, you know, you may not feel that, you may not think that, but I assure you that it is true, because some days I just want to rage at the world, but you guys are like the people that I vent to. And so we have a good relationship, you know, and I appreciate you guys. So I was having this, you know, conversation, I was joking with Glenn about this, because Mark and I are pretty much the same. Like, we will not leave our hidey hole. And Glenn is just a little bit better. And I was thinking about this, and I'm like, you know, you could look at this time in history one of two ways. And I'm a cynic, so it's very difficult for me. You could look at it one of two ways. You can look at it like, wow, can you believe how insane everything is? This is nuts. Can you believe the stuff that we're seeing on college campuses? Can you believe the stuff that we are seeing in the Middle East? Can you believe the stuff that we're seeing at the border? Can you believe the stuff that we are seeing, whether it's in our economy or whether it's just lawlessness or whether it's just evil that goes unpunished in this world? It is horrible. And inflation and wage growth and, oh, it just can't keep up. It's bad. And it grinds on you. It really does. It grinds on you to the point where you are resentful of the petty stuff. Like I saw an argument about people in the presidential primary and the Republican side arguing about boots. And I hate everybody. I hate all the people involved in that conversation, every damn one of them. Because I'm like, you're sucking up airtime from more serious. There are people dying across halfway across the world. And y'all are bitching about boots. Shut up. You pathetic people. And I get very, it makes me even, you see, it's a cycle. It makes you even more cynical and meaner. And I have a short fuse anyway. I have no tolerance. Some people say I'm cold. I'm not. I'm just very logical. And you feel like your tank is empty. I want to show you two videos. And this is going to seem weird. Like I said, I'm changing it up. The first video, who was this? This was some musician in Texas. And he, you know, some people travel, some people work Halloween night. I think it's a great time for door-to-door evangelism. Don't send me your emails about it. But, you know, he had a bucket of candy out and it said, take one piece of candy, please. One piece of candy per kid. Because he had home, he was working. And these people came up and this mom loaded up these kids' candy bags, looking right at the damn camera. They just, I mean, it was like a welfare free-for-all. Loaded handfuls. They're just, you know, loading up their bags. If you're watching the simulcast, Channel 347, DirecTV, YouTube, Facebook, Juan's showing it to you. If you're listening to the radio show across the country, you can hear some of it there. Just they emptied this whole container. Emptied the whole container. Now, I watched this. I saw this video yesterday at probably the most cynical point of my day. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Everything's horrible. Everything just sucks. And it just feeds into the cycle, right? It feeds into it. You're just like, everything's horrible. Look at how horrible people are. People are horrible. And then you're like, what's the purpose? Let's just let the world go to hell in a handbasket. Bring on Smod. I want to show you another video that probably won't get as many views. Because this is the one that made me stop. I don't know where this is. It's not the porch of a famous singer. They don't have big old grand columns on their porch, but they did have one of those little doorbell cameras. Same situation. You know, the person was out, they were working, doing whatever, and they had a bowl of candy, and it said one piece, and it was gone, predictably. And the kids, they show up, and they look at it, and it's empty, and what do? They're like, there's no candy. And this one little boy with his little plastic sword goes up, and he looks, and he's like, I'm gonna fix it. He puts his sword down, and he empties his bucket of candy into this bowl of candy. And the little girl comes up and starts doing the same thing. And then the other little girl who's dressed up as Sally from Nightmare Before Christmas and Has My Heart, she does the same thing. And they're like, okay. And they load it in there. And then one kid takes one little piece of candy back. It's, I love it. Oh my gosh, I love it. Shakespeare said, which was popularized further in modern times by Willy Wonka, so shines a good deed in a weary world. And I saw that video, I think, right about the time I was supposed to see that video, right when I was on the cusp of just like, bring on Smod. I will go in my front yard and I'll have a glass of whiskey, a dram of whiskey, and I will drink my whiskey and laugh as I watch the flaming fireball of molten rage hurtle towards Earth and end us all. And I was right at that moment when I saw this video. I'm like, well, there goes, ruins my Heather's moment. Gosh. But it was, you know, there's good in the world still. And as I said, as I started this, I said, there's one or two ways to look at the time we're in. Just like there's one or two ways to approach the empty candy bowl on the neighbor's porch. You can fill it and you can take from it. And I was thinking about this. I'm like, okay, yeah, it sucks. Everything's horrible right now. Inflation, you know, the economy. Are we going to World War III? I don't know. Seems like all the people who tell us that we're in biblical times seem awful close to the truth right now, maybe more than ever. But if not us, then who? And if not now, then when? For a time for a people such as this. I don't think that we are all put on this earth in this particular time period for just chance. I don't believe in that. I think that there's a reason why we're all here. And instead of looking at it as a burden, maybe we should look at it as a privilege, and maybe we should look at it like, well, there's something about all of us that maybe God was like, yeah, these people can handle it. Let's put them here. These people got it. They can get through this. I mean, nobody's perfect, and perfection isn't required to do great things. David shows you that. I mean, good grief, look at the lineage Jesus came from. So I was just thinking about this. Well, you know, you're equipping the call. Maybe there's a, maybe instead of, you know, looking at it like such a burden, it's a privilege to live in such a time where we have so much opportunity to reverse so many things. So maybe, just maybe, I'll let my cynicism just ebb a little bit and maybe look at it like that, even if it's just for today. New film that is out, and it's from the people who brought you The Chosen, and it's Angel Studios, and it's The Sound of Freedom and The Chosen. And Angel Studios is introducing a new film called After Death, and it looks at the ultimate mystery of what happens from when people have been on, you know, at death's door, who have died and, you know, come and have been brought back to life, whether their heart stops, etc. These are the perspectives of individuals who've, you know, kind of gone through this, and it uses first person accounts, and they also incorporate a lot of scientific knowledge and very careful research to give a very well-rounded picture of what life could be like in the next realm. It's rated PG-13. They have a whole group of experts in the fields of science and philosophy and medicine, and they all have this very unique insight into the phenomenon of the near-death experience. And you can go and see it in theaters. You can also get tickets for others. It's the pay it forward concept, where you can provide free tickets for others to see the film who may not be able to do so because, you know, times are tough economically. But you can find After Death in theaters now and find a theater near you. And to purchase tickets online, you can visit angel.com/Dana. And you can also find the pay it forward information as well, angel.com/Dana. And leave your preconceptions at the door and just buckle up for a very interesting, never before seen glimpse into what the next life could entail in After Death, which is in theaters now. To get your tickets today or to pay it forward, visit angel.com/Dana. That's angel.com/Dana. After Death, the end is only the beginning, rated PG-13.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Well, I think everybody knows now that the Texas Rangers defeated they led the franchise. Their manager led the franchise to the World Series title yesterday. Arizona Diamondbacks 5-0. I didn't watch it because I'm going to be real. I'm a situational baseball fan. I like the Cardinals. I'm a Cardinals fan. But, you know, good on the Rangers. Congrats to them. I live in Dallas, so I got to say that. Good on that. Cardinals broke their hearts. What was it? Like 7 years? How long ago was that? It was a while ago.
Yeah.
So congrats to them. Also, offshore wind farm is canceled, and the industry's prospects are dimming. We got a whole bunch of stuff on the way, folks. Sorry for the short headlines. Stick with us. But people need, honestly, if you're going to talk about helping any university, Hillsdale College doesn't get any federal funding. In fact, Hillsdale College rejects federal funding. They are anti-federal funding. They don't accept any of it. They're a small Christian classical liberal arts college in southern Michigan. And the only thing that they care about are merit and character. They don't care about color, sex, any of that stuff. They care about the strength of character, ability, and intention. And they also believe in America's great heritage of liberty. They get the difference between conservatism and republicanism as the party. And they foster open and honest debate. They've been doing this since they were founded in 1844. It's one of the few places in this country where people can go and get an actual education and be and shown the open door to critical thinking. They have a short video over at Dana4FORHillsdale.com. where they show you just exactly how Hillsdale's work is effective in defending American liberty, not just on its campuses, but across the country. To learn more about the mission of Hillsdale College, visit Dana4Hillsdale.com. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com. Hillsdale College, developing minds and improving hearts.
Have you been thinking about your home as an investment this whole time? If it's just another bill for you, do it the right way. If you've been stressed about paying back the massive loan you took out for it, it's not certain you'll sell it for more than what you paid for it. Don't become mortgage poor.
Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Looking for the drive-thru version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
are more likely to go in than those that didn't have a mother that served. But right now, today, 37% of active duty families are likely to recommend military service. 37%. They see what's going on today, and I've heard my colleagues say we shouldn't be injecting politics into the military, and that President Biden did that, and Lloyd Austin, Secretary of Defense, did that. But what are we doing to these military men and women? Politics are being injected right here, today. We have men and women that deserve to be promoted to serve where their country knows they are needed. And our military families today are saying, you know what? I don't want my kid serving in the military because they will be used as political pawns.
Well, who's doing that? That's Senator Joni Ernst out of Iowa. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. So let me tell you what this is about, because we got to take some people to task here. So this is the Senate trying to go after Tommy Tuberville, because Senator Tommy Tuberville has been protesting against the Democrats' insistence that the Pentagon use U.S. our taxpayer dollars to subsidize service members' abortion on demand as birth control. Now, that phrase, as I described it, is entirely 1,011% accurate. And he's saying that, no, we're not doing this. This is not what this is for. And Tuberville is he's absolutely correct. If you're going to plant your flag on any kind of hill, this is one to plant it on. And so now Democrats have been massaging their surrogates in the media and leading this fight against Tuberville for this. And so now you got these weak Republicans that are bending the knee on the Senate floor and joining Democrats in attacking Tommy Tuberville. It is shameful, absolutely shameful to see Republicans, including people like Senator Joni Ernst, who was going off on Tuberville on the floor in that speech. She's been on this program. I've always been, you know, pretty. I've never really had anything bad to say about her. But to see Republicans like her, and there are others, oh, we'll get to them, do more to protect Democrats who politicized the military than to protect one of their own who is fighting it. That is something else to behold. These weak Republicans would rather spend our hard-earned dollars, our tax dollars, on abortion as birth control, subsidizing, because they're too afraid to fight. Shame on them. And it wasn't just her, as you can imagine. You had everybody. You had Lindsey Graham fumed at Tuberville on the Senate floor. He went off on him. He said that Tuberville, he went off on him and said, you just denied this lady a promotion. Yeah, listen to this. This is Lindsey Graham doing the same thing. Audio soundbite 16.
Let me respond to my colleague respectfully. We have courts. If you think they've done something illegal, go to court. That's how you handle these things. The Pentagon has issued a legal opinion I disagree with, saying this doesn't violate the Hyde Amendment. I disagree with it. Here's what's going to happen. You've just denied this lady a promotion. You did that.
He didn't do that.
All of us are ready to promote her.
He didn't do that.
Because she deserves to be promoted.
I would love to ask people like Lindsey Graham and Joni Ernst this question, because apparently no one in our media is going to do it. Have we ever had a problem with these sorts of bills, these appropriations, these promotions before? I mean, it's rhetorical, because the answer is no. We haven't had a problem with them before. These all have always been passed with a bipartisan consensus. They haven't fought over it. They haven't been held up. And there's a reason, a very clear reason as to why. It is only now, after Democrats decide to insert the poison pill, a taxpayer-funded abortion on demand as birth control. And again, that's exactly what this is. To subsidize that on behalf of an already broke taxpayer. To give that money to the government, a government that says it has enough money to fight two wars. Well, hell, if you got enough money to fight two wars, and we got too many damn taxes. Democrats chose to politicize this by insisting upon the inclusion of the taxpayer subsidization of abortion. Democrats insisted on this. That is the reason why we have this historical holdup. We haven't had a problem with it before, but that's because Democrats have chosen not to play around with military funding and promotions like that before, to this extent. Tommy Tuberville is just doing what voters sent Tommy Tuberville there to do, to stand against this. That Lindsey Graham is weak isn't Tuberville's fault. That Joni Ernst is weak isn't Tuberville's fault. Nor is it the fault of the taxpayers across the country. It is not our fault that people like Lindsey Graham and Joni Ernst and these other senators that have been assailing Tuberville for his correct, fiscally responsible stance. It is not the vote. It's not the voters' responsibility to pick up for the lack of a spine for these people. You were sent there to fight against this, not to cave because you're terrified of the Democrats and their press. It's just disgusting to see this. They all ganged up on him on the Senate floor. All of them. Not all of them, but most of them. Oh, there's that. You had everybody from Dan Sullivan. They were all trying to seek unanimous consent to confirm all the various nominees they laid out their credentials. They were arguing them on the floor. Mitt Romney rose to say that he's concerned about military readiness. Did Mitt Romney stand and tell Democrats that he was concerned that they were imperiling military readiness when they insisted on attaching this? Because I don't seem to recall that. Todd Young out of Indiana. Were they all frustrated? Dan Sullivan out of Alaska, he said he was frustrated with Tuberville's objections. Was he frustrated when Democrats decided to marry this appropriation with this subsidy of taxpayer of abortion on demand as birth control? Because I'm just coming up blank, guys, with all of my resources and all of the services that we have. I'm just coming up blank when it comes to all the video and audio that I would gather for this to showcase it, you know, to bring you a more balanced perspective on it. It's just not there. It is pretty stunning. Audio soundbite 17, Sullivan. He went at Tuberville on the Senate floor. Listen to this.
And look, what Senator Tuberville said about the policy and Austin and Biden on this abortion policy, I fully agree with him. We should be suing to stop it. I think it's illegal. And he's also right. Everybody uses holds. I certainly use holds. But the key is you put a hold on someone who typically has some kind of control over the issue that you're trying to fix, some kind of responsibility. One of the things I've been talking to the senator from Alabama on is, all right, let's put a hold on the Undersecretary of Defense for policy. He's the guy. He's a civilian, and he's in charge of this policy dispute. Let's put a hold on him. That's the right guy. And squeeze him. But why are we putting holds on war heroes? I'm going to get to
They're
one
not putting
here in
holds
a minute.
On them. Let me correct Senator Dan Sullivan, because it's a shame to think that I would know more about the process of his job than he does. So the Associated Press, They told on themselves. This was a couple days back when they were saying that, oh, the Pentagon's warning of disruptions as Army and Marines lack confirmed leaders for the first time. And again, because it's the first time that Democrats chose to politicize something like this. Now, what they're talking about is the process of voting en masse. Take a giant chunk of these people and vote on multiple confirmations in one passing. Now, nothing is stopping the Senate from taking up each nomination and confirming each nomination, one nomination at a time. Not even Tuberville can stop that. He can stop en masse giant group confirmations, and that's what he's doing. So what you're hearing from these Republicans, number one, is that they're too damn weak to fight on your behalf against taxpayer-funded abortion. They don't want to sacrifice themselves on the altar of a good and principled fight. They'd rather you foot the bill and pay for someone else's abortion on demand as birth control. Happy to provide and argue with you into a hole in the ground any drive-by who wants to take issue with that, because the statistics are on this thing called the internet, and they're actually published by Planned Parenthood themselves. Aside from that, no one's stopping to vote on each individual. Tuberville, like I said, he can't do that. But these people are so weak and so cowardly. They're going harder at one of their own than they are the Democrats who put everybody in that position in the first place. This is like attacking Israel for saying that how dare you defend yourself because you got attacked by Hamas. It's like saying, how dare you, Republican senator, try to stop this action that Democrats are doing. I'm just talking about cause and effect here and how the left seems to always struggle with understanding it, no matter what the variables are. I mean, he has been hysterically attacked by Democrats and now Republicans that are joining right in with it. And the problem again, so many of these nominees that they have, and so many, like, for instance, you have Air Force Lieutenant General Jim Slife, the Federalist head of peace on Slife, who after George Floyd's death wrote a memo claiming that U.S. service members are naive to believe that so-called institutional racism and unconscious bias don't affect the military. He said it was important for the military to listen to other perspectives and accept them as valid. He added that because he's a middle-aged white man who grew up in a middle-class family, he's limited in his perspective. He pushes DEI and Marxism. He's not the only one. I actually think that this is a smart move on Tuberville's part because, A, you're blocking taxpayer-subsidized abortion on demand as birth control, but also because, number two, you are stopping a mass confirmation. Some of these apples in this barrel are bad. Some of them are pushing DEI and CRT, and they're being thrown in there with some of the better ones so that they can hide in the reputations of the good ones, and they can hide their DEI CRT nonsense backgrounds. So there's two great benefits that we have from Tuberville doing this. So if these people want to stand against Tuberville, these senators, you're standing against the American people. You know how I started the show? I wanted to fill everybody's tank. My tank's already half. Okay. I feel like if you're standing against Tuberville on this point, you're standing against the American people. You're standing against a strong military. You're standing against actual military preparedness. You're standing against life. You're weak and you got to go. Remember their names and make them famous. Partners over at Patriot Mobile, the only Christian conservative cell phone service in the country, and they want to save you money without funding the left. For 10 years now, actually now over 10 years, you can make the switch, make Patriot Mobile your provider, and get free activation using code Dana. Their team has been great supporters of the show. I'm proud to partner with them, proud to be a customer, love my service. They offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best service in your area without funding the far left. And when you switch, you're going to save you some money. They got plans tailor-made for everybody, and they have a 100% U.S.-based customer service team. They're going to make it very easy for you to switch. You can keep your phone, keep your number. If you want to get a new number, you want to upgrade your phone, it is entirely fine for you. The choice is yours. Do whatever you want. And they're just going to make your service affordable. And ask about that coverage guarantee. All dependable nationwide coverage and all three major networks. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT. And be sure to mention offer code Dana to get free activation. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT. Make the switch today.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
When a farmer sells his commodities normally, you have to go through the grocery store and the farmers get about 18 cents for every federal dollar, every dollar they have. Sometimes you get less than that.
I loved what he said at the end. He goes, and some, but. Like, what's that? What do you farm? A little bit of Andon Sunbutt. What is he talking? Okay, I was asking Kane. I don't know. I don't even know what the hell question to ask. What?
Sunbutt.
Oh my gosh, can I have that forever? Sunbutt.
Former governor of Vilsack.
Sunbutt. And was he trying to explain how farming works? I don't understand.
I think so.
I don't feel bad for him. I know some of y'all out there do. I don't. Work him harder.
Based on what he said, I feel bad for farmers. They're only getting 18 cents on the dollar?
Everything that you think our regulations are bad here, which they are, in Britain. I don't know how they I don't know how they grow food there. So one of the shows I started watching over lockdown was Clarkson's Farm. I love Jeremy Clarkson. Totally disagree. He's so wrong on Brexit. I understand why he has the position he does, but he's so wrong. Anyway, but he did it like as a hobby in the beginning. And then he thought, you know, this is actually really neat to be able to, you know, I want to open a restaurant. I want to serve food that's all from local, everything local, nothing that is brought in. He wanted everything from the herbs to the milk to everything, even the ingredients that they used to make, everything except salt, I think is what he said. Everything he wanted to be from the local area because they could do it. Well, you have British regulations that stop you. You had the Chippy Norton, which is like a bunch of stuffed shirts, all in tweed. I watched a city council meeting or a council, the Chippy Norton council meeting, where a guy was complaining about Clarkson building a restaurant on his own land that was far away from where this guy lived because he enjoys the night sky. He likes the dark sky. The regulations and everything that they have over there, it's almost like they penalize you if you are into agriculture in Britain. I mean, there's a lot of stuff here similarly that we get into, but it shocked me. And then it became less about, he stopped doing it as like a hobbyist. And because he thought it was fun and would make good content, it became a thing for him. Like he really became a believer and realized how he was enraged on behalf of all of these farmers and people raising sheep and everything over there. He was so livid and hearing how they needed the money. They needed to be able to sell what they were growing and raising. And oh, man, it's a very interesting show if you haven't watched it. Just made me think when Biden was talking about this, I'm like, you know nothing about farming. Stick with us. Our second hour is coming up in mere moments.
My last question, are you wearing higher heels than Ron DeSantis next week at the debate so you can look taller than him on the stage?
I don't know. We'll have to figure that out. I can tell you, I've always talked about my high heels.
Vagina,
I've never,
woman.
You know, hid that from anybody. Woman. I've always said, don't wear them if you can't run in them.
You know what? I'm really not going to take people who worship at the altar of spray tans and all that stuff to, you know, sit here. I'm not talking about Nikki Haley. I'm talking about all the petty fighting in the Republican primary. People fighting over whether or not Ron DeSantis wears lifts. And I never realized that so many reportedly straight dudes in the Republican Party could be obsessed with footwear and spray tans. I just couldn't, you know. Anyway, but Nikki Haley talking about that, I'm just like, she's got to put out there, guys, in case you forgot, I'm a woman, vagina and breasts, woman card, lady. Can we just go one cycle? Just getting so Freudian unintentionally. Can we just go one political election without someone having to go out and be like, but I'm a woman though. Here's my woman stuff. Can just stop it. Welcome back to the program. Dana Loesch here. I started off first hour trying to like fill everybody's tank up. I'm three quarters now. Mm-hmm. Three quarters. I'm going to need to see some more happy videos. So I'm just saying. You can listen to the radio show Coast to Coast. You can watch the simulcast as well on channel 347 DirecTV, YouTube, Facebook. All kinds of good stuff. All right, so can we? We got to talk about the Israel stuff. We got to talk about how Germany is apparently going to hell in a handbasket. And we also need to talk about this proposal. Guys, so what is it we've heard from Democrats about colleges? I mean, we just had Joe Biden pass. Well, how many billions was it? Another student loan forgiveness.
Yeah.
Imagine if a Republican went out and said, okay, well, I see your student loan forgiveness, and I'm going to do you one better, Joe Biden. How about free universities total? What if a Republican came out and said that? I'm just saying, what if a Republican came out and said, we're going to have free federally funded universities? I know the words free federally funded make no sense. But what if you had a Republican proposing that? It would be like loan forgiveness on steroids, would it not? And you would think that that's silly. I mean, do you think, I mean, this is exactly what Democrats are proposing, right? Federally funded universities, and you get free degrees. Free, federally funded. I mean, it's just, you know, the F's, all the F's. I'm just saying that that would be weird, right? Because that's not free. You're paying for it. Well, that is exactly actually what was proposed. In a new campaign policy video, the former president, Trump, has said he wants to revolutionize higher education if elected president. Okay, guys, I got major questions. Are we agreeing with Democrats now? I don't care where you stand on primary candidates. Your fealty is to the country. If you're an American. Are we agreeing with Democrats now about funding everybody's education? Is that what we're doing? Because that's literally what he proposed. There's a video out. I'm not playing the whole thing. But I'm telling you, the latest proposal, they want to have federally funded academies to grant credit to, I'm trying to figure out how that's a good thing that works. And he said that he wants to make Harvard pay for it, like the wall we don't have. So I don't know why we would try to adopt and do what Democrats are doing with higher education. That is so dangerous to play with. That's not a conservative idea. That's socialism. It is. That is socialism. You can wrap it up in whatever personality you want to, but it's socialism, guys. How does that make sense? I read it. I was reading the thing. I mean, I'll give credit where due. I don't care. I'm still going to be doing what I do, no matter who's in the White House, although, you know, probably we might be in World War III and taxed to death. I mean, who knows? But I don't know. Nobody, nothing. But this is not a conservative idea. Some of the people pushing it, I'm not surprised to see. I will say that there's some new thought in conservatism now, where they're trying to bring back the George W. Bush compassionate conservatism. And they act like, because history began the day they were born, that this is a new concept. I see a lot of people doing this. And I see some of the same people saying, oh, this is going to revolutionize. It's not going to revolutionize. It's already being done. I mean, wait, you're telling me that you're going to come into the world of education, which already has federally funded everything, and they already want to subsidize all of it and say, guys, we're going to do this exact same thing that you're doing. It's revolutionizing it. You're just continuing it. In fact, what you're doing is you're further validating it from the perspective of the right. That's not revolutionizing. That is succumbing. That is being absorbed. It is surrendering. It is losing. I've seen some people, like I said, some of these influencers do this before. These are the same people who think that the government should pay you to have kids. I see these same people go, look what they're doing in Hungary. Really? Wait, didn't we just spend like 20 years blasting the left for trying to always compare everything that we were doing here to Europe? And now the right's going to start partaking in this? What in the hell? Where did the thinking people go? They were giving people government stipends and free minivans if you have X amount of kids. I actually had a debate with someone who hosts a podcast, and they never aired it, interestingly. And then we're friendly. We get along, and they, you know, I don't have anything bad to say about them, except they're totally, they think socialism light is conservatism, and it's not. But they were saying, yeah, we gotta, you know, we have to pay people. I actually had them tell me that we should pay people here to have kids so we don't have to have people come across the border. And I looked at them, and I'm like, so welfare, because that's worked so well. And they just stared at me. This never aired. It never aired. It was totally recorded and never aired. I'm like, so you're promoting welfare. I'm like, well, it's not welfare per se. No, it's welfare. And you think that that's worked well here? Well, they do it in Hungary. We're not Hungary. You're telling me that we've already done that here. You're telling me that it works here because we pay people per kid. You're telling me that it works here? How is that conservatism? How is that limited government? How does that uphold any of the values that we say that we uphold? Do you know, I think socialism and communism are evil. And evil perverts things. I think people have a weird view. They think that maybe evil destroys things. Evil perverts stuff, which is worse. Because it's a more debased style of destruction. Think about it. I've always told people this. I don't want to destroy politically anyone. I want to convert them. But it takes more effort. The perversion to actually enter into the mind or the ideological mindset of the right and convince them that, yeah, we should adopt these things. Let's adopt Democrats' style of welfare. And we'll say that our welfare is more virtuous because our ideology is better. That's the ticket. See, we'll say that our federally funded education is better because our ideology is better. So the entire argument then rests upon the leveraging of big government to evolve itself in the lives of everyday citizens. The merit of that is determined by the ideology involved. So you're telling me that big government is okay so long as the people that you like are running it. Because that's the argument that is being made here. Just look at, this is why people need to take logic classes. The only, I will say, in college, the most valuable class that I ever taught, that I ever took was logic. I had several years I took advanced logic. It was the most brilliant, valuable course that, and I had a great, great instructor. But do you realize the danger in this? I have friends, and these are well-known conservatives. It was a well-known conservative podcast host. It ended up so bad that they never aired it. That's all I'm going to say, because I don't want to... They do some good work, but that was bad. And I looked at them. I'm like, so you're telling me that you're fine with leveraging big government based on ideology, but that's situational and it depends on the ideology. So your issue isn't with big government per se. So you're making an anti-conservative argument to argue for anti-conservatism, and you're telling me that's conservatism, correct? At one point, they were just so tongue-tied. They just sat there and looked at me. I see that argument being made right now. So it is, if you're telling me that it's okay that to have big government, so long as it pushes the right ideology, you are not a conservative, because that is not what conservatism is. And I doubt that any of these people pushing this can define what, let me tell you what conservatism is. It's not republicanism. Conservatives believe in the republic, but we believe in the liberty of the individual. That is above all. And that is what this republic, the reason the republic is made great is because the freedom of the individual. The republic doesn't make the freedom of the individual great. Our individual liberty makes the republic great. And that is the common identity. That's why I say you can go everywhere else and you can't be French or Italian, etc. You can come to America and you can be American, because do you want to be free? Yes or no? So that's what conservatives believe. The individual liberty of a person, of the citizen. And when you talk about conservative, what are we conserving? That liberty against big government, against bad monetary policy, against bad foreign policy, anything that would infringe upon the sovereignty of the individual as the priority in this republic. That is conservatism. That's why it's not republicanism. The party, republicanism, is about party first. And they believe in a lot of spending. Your neocons are in there. Not all of them, but a good portion of them. No Child Left Behind is in that. Too Big to Fail is in that. The Joni Ernst, Lindsey Grahams, Sullivans, and others that are going after Tommy Tuberville for refusing to spend taxpayer dollars to subsidize abortion on demand as birth control for service members. They're all part of that. That's why I'm not a Republican. I'm a conservative. People pushing these sorts of policies, these are anti-conservative policies. And I want you to be very careful who promotes this. Because it's one thing, I get that people like certain politicians and they like personalities. I get it. Especially when you feel like the world is closing in on you. But one of the reasons that the world's closing in on conservatives is because we have given too many bad ideas a pass for too damn long. I say this as someone who has been in the streets a hell of a lot longer than the people bitching about this now. We got a ways to go.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Oh my gosh. So, I don't know. Airbnbs freak me out for stories like this. New York Post. Bat infestation turned Airbnb rental into house of horrors, says the lawsuit. A group of Airbnb guests claimed that their joyful 50th high school reunion party at a rental property in Michigan turned into a Halloween horror movie because they were attacked by a horde of bats. The distressed renters filed a civil complaint against Airbnb, good luck with that, for having negligently allowed the bat-infested home to be advertised. They named the defendants, the owners as defendants. They said that the residence was not safe. They said it was every renter's worst nightmare. They were actually attacked. They have pictures, too. Oh, gosh. They said that guests were awakened in the middle of the night. They found dark shapes flying around the bedroom, screeching sounds, all kinds of stuff. They were attacked. I don't know if anybody was bitten. They were struck by the bats. They said some of them got entangled in the women's hair. One guest did suffer bites. And they said that the bats managed to burrow their way into the bedding when they tried to hide under the covers. That's disgusting. Oh, no. That's terrifying. Nope. No, thank you. Nancy Pelosi was served. She was subpoenaed. She was subpoenaed on the floor. It was in the case. Remember when her husband, it was the home invader? Where I'm trying to pull this article up and it's not wanting to pull up. Where she had been, her husband was assaulted. So it's related to that case. And she was served with a subpoena. She announced it on the House floor. She made the announcement that she has to produce documents in a criminal case in California via the House clerk. It's in relation to that attack. But nobody really knows a heck of a lot about it. Like, they don't know if she's going to have to testify. Like, what? Why? It's weird. Second pig heart transplant patient did not make it. They passed away. They passed away at a Maryland hospital after showing signs of organ rejection. Humans could breed in space after the International Space Station. They grew an embryo in space for the first time. They said the boffins on the International Space Station have managed to grow a mouse embryo high up in space. So I feel like that we're pretty far off from that. You know, that's like a big difference. It's a big difference. A North Dakota woman fatally poisoned her boyfriend after he inherited $30 million. Actually, he didn't inherit anything. She did all this for nothing. Oh. Yeah, that was part of the story too. Oh. We have a lot more on the way. Stick with us.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
That's a reason to not have them. And, you know, I think when we look at this as a whole, I would encourage the other side to not so lightly throw around the idea of innocent Palestinian civilians, as is frequently said. I don't think we would so lightly throw around the term innocent Nazi civilians during World War II.
I think it's very important to draw a distinction here, because this is Brian Mast. He's a representative out of Florida. Welcome back to the program, by the way. Bottom of this second hour, Dana Lash with you. The left has lost their mind on him. And they're mad at him because he was saying in the video that, you know, here he was discussing the whole situation of the term Palestinians, innocent Palestinian civilians. And he's specifically talking about the people that have been seen, whether it's in Gaza or whether it's in London or whether it's in New York, cheering literally for the destruction of its neighbor to the north. That is what he's talking about. And when you put his remarks in context, where is the lie? That's what he's talking about. This is what the left does. They like to use everybody else as shields. They do. They use every, and all of this now is forcing, they're trying to force the administration. The administration, they won't say ceasefire. You know what they're saying? They're saying pause. They're saying that we should have a pause. And by we, Israel, that they should have, they should pause. But to this comment, when AOC had tweeted, we can stop pretending people are treated equally here. Yeah, you're right. Because we have Jewish Americans who are being attacked and harassed and assaulted at an unprecedented rate. In fact, according to all available uniform crime reports compiled over the last 3 decades, there's been an insane increase in that. Not in any crimes against Muslims, but specifically against Jewish Americans. And yet it's the White House that decides to come out with an Islamophobia thing. They had a whole statement about their first ever national strategy to counter Islamophobia. Not anti-Semitism, but Islamophobia. And it's because they're hemorrhaging Arab support. Because you have Arab Americans here that are telling the Biden administration that we're not going to vote for you in swing states if you don't tell Israel to stop defending itself. And the administration is weak and they're ridiculous. And so, of course, they're OK, well, let's have a pause. They think that that's triangulation. They think that that's kind of going halfway. Just wild. Here's the thing. If you do not want to be conflated with Nazis, then don't defend Nazism. If you don't want to be conflated with Nazis, then don't cheer on the destruction of a nation because they're simply Jewish. If you don't want to be conflated with Nazis, then don't defend people who are raping women and burning babies because they were Jews. I mean, it's really easy to understand, right? Really easy to understand. I mean, they couldn't even muster together any kind of censure of Ilhan Omar a year or so ago. It's and this administration is growing weak and shaky on this issue. Here you literally had the Hamas official, the Hamas leader, Ghazi Hamad, from his mansion in Qatar, because they're driving around eating sushi, living in palaces in Qatar. He literally said that Hamas is going to keep doing October 7th until Israel is annihilated. He literally said that this week in a broadcast interview, the video of which is available online. And everyone's saying Israel needs to stop and cease fire. This is Hamas's leadership. Even since this video came out yesterday, not a single Democrat has said that Hamas should maybe cease fire. Hell, not even a single Democrat demanded that Hamas release the hostages. They're trying to get all of their surrogates in the media and any other wayward Democrat back on the plantation of being pro-Hamas. I mean, he came out with this video, and I haven't seen anything from literally the day after this video comes out. The day after this interview, where the Hamas leader is saying they're going to repeat October 7th until Israel is annihilated. The damn day after, Kamala Harris is out there for the vice president who did less than in her position than Karen Pence did as first or second lady, gets out there and says, we're going to have a national initiative on Islamophobia. After Hamas was saying that they're going to keep attacking like October 7th until Israel is annihilated. So Brian Mast, he's making a point here. He's talking about all the people who've been cheerleading this, the people who've been defending it, the people who've been denying it. And the reason why these protestations are increasing is because Israel is putting more and more pressure on Hamas in Gaza. If Angelina Jolie is going to be a UN goodwill ambassador, then she would go a long way in being educated on the areas of conflict. I think she's trying to be George Clooney's wife, unsuccessfully. But she, who I don't agree with politically, but at least there's some effort at education there. And I hate to say this because I love her dad. But she's wrong here, and you got to call it out. This was ridiculous. She had a piece up. She put it on Instagram where she blasted Israel for remember we talked about this, the strike that took place and it collapsed one of their tunnels, one of Hamas's many of their like 300 mile tunnels that they have. Let me tell you something about the tunnels too that they have there. Apparently, because I have some FLIR stuff, right? We got some night vision. We've got some optics and different tools to own the night should anything ever go down sideways at Lash HQ. In the tunnels there, the night vision optics don't work. I did not know that. They had video of these tunnels, 300 miles of these tunnels. Now think about it. The entire area of Gaza, like lengthwise, how many is like 30 something miles long and 6 miles across. But you have 300 some odd miles of tunnels. One person can go through at a time, pitch black. Pitch black, there's no ambient light. And I understand that with some optics, you have to have ambient light for those to be functional. So I want you to think about what IDF has to go through. It is like the worst trench style warfare that you could ever imagine. This is subterranean warfare. This is horrific. They're going to lose a lot of people to eradicate Hamas. And the thinking is that there are a lot of the hostages are being kept in these tunnels. So you had Angelina Jolie. I'm looking for this that I have posted on Twitter, reportedly, the picture of one of the areas above the tunnels. She said this was a deliberate bombing of a trapped population of nowhere to flee. Gaza has been an open-air prison for 2 decades and is fast becoming a mass grave. 40% of those are children. Whole families are being murdered. And she says, by refusing to demand a humanitarian ceasefire and blocking the UN Security Council from imposing one on both parties, world leaders are complicit in these crimes. Wow, it's almost like no Israelis were killed at all. It was just all... does she know who's violated the ceasefire every time they've called for one? Curious. Yeah, Kane, who is that? Go ahead and tell everybody. Do you know?
Hamas.
Oh, it's been Hamas. Why does she think it's not an open-air prison? That's a lie. There's no such thing as an occupation. That didn't happen, and that doesn't exist. Why are people trying to rewrite history? This is what's so stupid about this. Again, I go back to when Israel unilaterally pulled out of Gaza. They're not occupying Gaza. They withdrew in 2005, and that was under their prime minister, Eric Sharon. They came up with this disengagement plan several years before. And they keep saying that Israel is the occupier, and they keep saying it's, you know, an open air prison, and that they keep saying this, and they have the responsibility of providing essential services and utilities and all this stuff. A lot of people don't understand the history. See, they evacuated Gaza. Israel literally demolished 26 of its own synagogues and leaving. They withdrew over 1,700 people from 21 different settlements. They withdrew 166 Israeli farmers. They left behind, and these farms produced hundreds of millions of dollars in flowers and agricultural products. In leaving Gaza, Israel gave up 70% of its organic produce, because they grew it in Gaza. And they left a massive infrastructure of greenhouses, farmland, irrigation, all of that. They left it literally, and this is just what they call themselves. I don't believe in Palestine. It's never existed. Palestinian is not an ethnicity. But the ruling entity calls itself the Palestinian Authority. Israel left it to the Palestinian Authority, who could have used it as a huge economic boost. They literally, it's like walking in to a house, turnkey. You don't have to do anything to it. It's yours. I've never seen anyone come across land so easily. And they had all of these techniques that were specifically developed in the greenhouses to deal with the sandy composition of the soil, the wet, everything. But guess what happened after they took it over? So Hamas was elected immediately after that. Hamas and Fatah, they were two sides of the same coin that was the Palestinian Authority, is a Palestinian Authority. So Hamas wins the election, and Hamas loots and destroys the greenhouses, destroys the irrigation, destroys all of it. They never actually got to use them because their elected government destroyed them. And even after Israel left in 2005, they still provided somehow. I don't know why you're responsible to provide electricity to the sovereign entity next to you, but they did. They provided Gaza with electricity. I mean, at no point, because over, I think what, at over 50% of Gaza's electricity was provided by Israel, and Israel never charged them for it. Now, you would think maybe in that time, if you're a smart government, like, you know, if Hamas was smart, they would have made sure that they were self-sufficient and be and had the ability to provide their own electricity. But just like they looted their greenhouses and destroyed their ability to grow their own produce and just looted everything, they also did this. They also destroyed any opportunity, and they destroyed any infrastructure where they could have maintained their own electricity or added onto it or improved existing infrastructure. They had one diesel plant where that provided apparently the other half of Gaza's energy. And that's a disaster because Hamas never kept up with it. And the people apparently never demanded that they did. And that's accurate to say. Do you know why they didn't have another election after Hamas won that election? Because Hamas's popularity was so unbelievable, Fatah would have been eradicated. Fatah did not want to lose power. So the head of the Palestinian Authority, who is the chair of Fatah, decided to suspend elections because Hamas was so popular. Even after everything I just shared with you. Because hate's popular. Look on social media. Man, hate rules the day. So Hamas never reconstructed their grid. They never did any of this stuff. They didn't do anything to benefit their general population. They didn't upgrade their sewage system. They didn't upgrade any electricity. They didn't do any of this stuff. I mean, Israel even supplied over something like 10% of Gaza's water. And they had their local reservoirs. Amnesty International, I think back in 07 or 08, wrote a piece about how Hamas and the elected government of Gaza couldn't even keep up the reservoirs. They couldn't even do their just basic due government diligence there. So the water was unsafe to drink. Since their election, Hamas has been solely and Hamas alone in control of Gaza. Hamas controls everything from utilities, from the economy to the agriculture, literally everything. And what they have done is destroyed any advantage that they would have had as a government. They've destroyed any chance that people would have had to be self-sufficient and independent in order to wage a campaign of terror, because in their actual charter, they don't believe that Israel has the right to exist. So pray tell, Angelina Jolie, how in the ever-loving hell is this Israel's responsibility? How in the ever-loving hell do you people who look at yourselves on camera and in magazines every damn day, how do you look at yourselves after saying just asinine clownery like that and expect to be taken seriously? A little bit of history and education goes a long way.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Well, you know, I think Fireball is kind of like the pumpkin spice, maybe, of the liquor world. I saw a meme that says, oh, this candle smells like Fireball. So I was like, no, that's cinnamon gel. Let's see. This headline, drunk Florida man takes company car for a spin after downing two Fireball shots, say deputies. Marion County, Florida, Lee Rushing was charged with a DUI after an incident that unfolded Monday. They said the 61-year-old man was reported to be driving under the influence. They pulled him over. His eyes were watery. He smelled like cinnamon. And he said he just had a couple shots of Fireball. He failed every sobriety test. And then he had knee injuries that prevented him from doing the other things. He was released after a $1,000 bond. Whew. Third hour next.
And for the United States, that we will continue to honor the importance of the Palestinian people and their right to self-determination and dignity.
Yeah. Telling you. why is I it would be great if they gave as much lip service attention to what the Israelis went through. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. We are at the top of this third hour. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream the program as well. Facebook, I had to think. YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV, all those good places. So remember, I started the show today. I filled everyone's tank and I showed you the good and bad of the Halloween kid candy thing. Now I'm like a little less than I'm getting towards a quarter of a tank, maybe. We're there, yeah, because it goes, you get pretty cynical going through all of this. And then especially with this story here, before we went into Florida Man last hour, I was telling you how Hamas and Hamas alone is to blame for everything that's been going on in Gaza. And I understand, I get that people are like citing the WikiLeaks stuff and they're like, yeah, but Dana, look at the involvement. I don't care. Let's just say that every conspiracy out there is true. Hamas was still elected. They still enjoy major popularity to the point where more so than Fatah. There's literally nothing that anyone did that changed that. And they could have put all of the infrastructure that was left to them in 2005 to use, and they chose not to do that. So that's what the conspiracy theories don't address. Like, why did they destroy the greenhouses? Why did they destroy all the farmland? Like, why did they destroy all the stuff? Why did they do that? That's weird. Why did they not keep up with when they had the ability to do so with infrastructure and keep that? Why do they demand that everybody else provide all their utilities for free? No one asks for accountability from Hamas. They just keep saying that it's Israel, it's Israel, it's Israel. No one asks for accountability for them. Nobody says that. Nobody asks. And I'm so tired of hearing it over and over again. And whether it's people like Angelina Jolie posting stuff on social media, on Instagram. I mean, they are to blame. Hamas is, and Hamas alone is to blame. I mean, the New York Times, let me pull this up. This was just a couple of days ago. The New York Times literally, who, you know, they're not exactly friendly to Israel. They actually had to admit, as Gazans scrounge for food and water, Hamas sits on a rich trove of supplies. They've been stockpiling their own food, fuel, and medicine, and ammo and weapons, and they keep it all for themselves. They actually had to write about this. The New York Times actually had to write about this. They said, quote, Hamas has hundreds of thousands of gallons of fuel for vehicles and rockets, caches of ammunition, explosives and materials to make more, stockpiles of food and water and medicine. They quote a senior Lebanese official that Hamas, quote, has enough stocked away to keep fighting for 3 or 4 months without resupply. I mean, they chose to kill over 1,400 people by sending terrorists into Israel, and they could have stopped this from escalating further had they handed over the hundreds of hostages that they have. But they don't. And then Hamas will stop its own people from leaving even as their leadership sits in palaces in Qatar. They declare Times of Israel, and this was noted by New York Times also, the leadership of Hamas said no nation is liberated without sacrifices. Well, they're sacrificing by sitting on their giant fat terrorist asses in Qatar, literally dining on sushi. Because apparently that was in a video. Isn't that something else? They're to blame alone for this. So this whole idea of a ceasefire, this administration is so weak. So weak. How in the world? Oh, we need to have a pause. There ain't going to be no pause until release the hostages. Release the hostages. No pause until then. There's not going to be a pause. There's not going to be a ceasefire. It shouldn't be a ceasefire. Hamas needs to be destroyed, utterly destroyed. Now, notice how when you say that, all of their supporters freak out. But they had no problems when Hamas was doing everything that it was doing to Israel. This is weird. I saw that they had a Jewish history mural outside of Cantor's Deli, which is a very iconic Los Angeles deli that apparently it's been open since before Israel became the recognized country that it is. They were defaced with graffiti. It's wild. And that's just like one of many instances. This is just crazy to see all this. But you know what's interesting, though? Because they keep saying Gaza's occupied. Gaza is occupied. Have you seen the story from ABC News? Sudan is now one of the worst humanitarian nightmares in recent history. 5.6 million people have been displaced both within and without, within and outside of national borders. Interesting. You probably haven't heard a lot of people talking about that. They have this huge humanitarian crisis, internal conflict, political instability. Not only that, but there are other instances. Let me pull a couple of other things up. I had this in your prep that I sent out. If you get the prep email over at Chapter and Verse, I said sent this out as well. I noticed that Pakistan is expelling 1.7 million refugees. And they just bulldozed a bunch of shelters over there. And they have hundreds of thousands of Afghans that are now fleeing to the border. Refugees that want to be settled elsewhere. Many have lived in Pakistan for decades. So they're forcing these Afghans to leave Pakistan. Where are all the people protesting that? That's from the BBC, by the way. They had 10,000 Afghan refugees that were rushing to border areas. See, that's okay. Because they can't blame it on Jewish people. That's the reality. Let's be real. They can't blame it on Jewish people, so we're not going to talk about that. What do you mean? Like Arabic people going after other Arabic people? Oh, we can't talk about it. There's no Jewish people involved. So we can't blame it on any Jewish people, so let's not talk about it. Notice how AOC hasn't cried for any of these people. I didn't see anything from the great UN humanitarian Angelina Jolie. I didn't see anything from her about this. Is it because there's no Jewish people to blame it on? I'm curious. Or the situation in Sudan. It's because there's no Jewish people to blame it on? I'm interested in understanding what motivates people to be upset over certain Arabic groups and others and not be upset over, you know, like these. Like, why not be, you're not upset over these Afghans that are being expelled from Pakistan. You're not upset about where's the objection to what, you know, the Pakistanis are so cruel. Where's your objections? I'm amazed at the ignorance. Listen to this. This is John Kirby, because they're voting today. The voting begins on whether or not there's going to be an Israeli assistance bill that will be passed out of the House, because you've had the administration that wanted to tie it to Ukraine spending, more money to Ukraine. And John Kirby responds. He was asked about this just moments ago. Listen.
So was the vice president correct? He would veto an Israel-only bill if it didn't have other issues that you were concerned about.
The president would veto an only Israel bill. I think that we've made that clear.
Why? Why couldn't you do one thing at a time? Because they can't tie it to money laundering in Ukraine. That's why. They can't tie it to any of those other things. That's why. Oh, can't do that. Heaven forbid. Can't tie it to any of these other things. So, I got a lot of questions. There was also, they said that Mike Johnson, did you see, by the way, that they're so mad at Mike Johnson, the new speaker? I got to share this with you. Hang on. Before I get into this other stuff, hold up. They're mad at Mike Johnson because he's not rich. No, I mean it. Like, they're mad at him because he isn't rich. who was it that wrote this piece? It was a stupid piece. But they were going after him by saying that he doesn't have a ton of money in savings, and he doesn't have a lot of cash on hand, and how is he going to get money and all this other stuff. I mean, they were going after him for, like, not being corrupt. I don't know how else to say it. Like, that's true. They're going after him for the stuff that Joe Biden has done, for not doing what Joe Biden has done. I can't make sense of it. I can't make sense of it. But that's what they're doing. They're going after him because it says Mike, like this guy, Mike Johnson doesn't have any retirement savings. It's the Daily Beast. He doesn't own a single stock, and he doesn't have assets at all. He has less than $5,000 in his bank account. He's got a $250,000 mortgage, a home equity loan, and a personal loan. What's his retirement plan? To lobby? Oh my gosh, are you telling me that Mike Johnson lives like most Americans do right now while he's raising his kids? Oh, quel horror. He's so bad. You know what he should do? He should go and sell out our national security to the CCP. And then if you try to hold them accountable, write this completely BSing editorial for USA Today in which you say that any criticism over your violation of any kind of law or selling out national security in exchange for enriching yourself with the CCP is just, well, it's demonizing your addiction. Oh, Hunter Biden wrote that. We're going to talk about that coming up. Oh boy, buckle up. I know he did. As we get moving, I don't know if he was sober when he wrote it. I mean, I don't even know if he did. He send it with like white powder? I don't know.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So everybody has heard of Vanta Black, right? Vanta Black is like the blackest black color that you can ever buy. It like sucks the light out of a room. Except you can't actually buy it. I mean, it was developed for UK's defense ministry, and apparently it's also reportedly carcinogenic. But you can get Black 4.0. Now, Black 4.0 is the blackest paint that you can actually purchase. And you, I mean, really don't have, there's not a reflection on it. It is apparently discomforting for people to see it. It is really, it's like, it sounds amazing, and I want to paint a whole house in it. I would be the person that has the black 4.0 house, not going to lie. That sounds so cool. I want to paint something with it. I don't even know what, Kane. We got to do in the new studio. Maybe I can paint something with the black 4.0. Apparently, though, it's really expensive. Like it's not like a bucket. It's like a bottle. It's like $50. I don't know if that's actually realistic. But anyway, it's just, you know, kind of cool to know there's a super goth black out there. Let's see. Cannabis Candies. What a weird name. That's so. I'm sorry. Cannabis sounds so bougie. It doesn't it? Right? I know what it's. I know. Just say pot. Like when you say cannabis, just stop it. Shut up. You're just trying to sound pretentious. So anyway, there was some pot candy. Kids that were in Alameda, of course it's California, they found pot-infused fruit chews amongst the candy that they received. I bet it chilled them out. No, I'm just kidding. They said, well, I'm not. Don't give your kids pot chews. It says that one child ingested the THC candy, became ill, and sought medical attention so bad. Two families found the weed candy amongst the treats that they got at a PTA event. They were labeled as Lost Farm Cannabis-Infused Fruit Chews. How much you want to bet that someone just didn't know? It was like some stoner who's like, oh, I guess I'm no county. How about some of these? This is that one. Right? Wait, how much you want to bet that they just thought, it's just a fruit juice? It's like having ginkgo biloba. It's just like that. Remember ginkgo biloba? Oh my gosh. Sidebar, when I was in high school track, I was varsity. And like from the get-go. And my mom gave me ginkgo biloba caplets. And one of these girls who was like suckier than me, and I always beat her and she was jealous. She was trying to say that I was on performance enhancing drugs. I'm like, it's ginkgo biloba from the health food store, you fruitcake. Anyway, a trooper wrangled a wayward chicken, a banjo cover band of metal songs, Wayward Chicken. A trooper wrangled a wayward chicken off off the interstate in Seattle. That chicken didn't cross the road. There's video of it and it's hysterical. He totally wrangled that chicken. I love it. All right, stick with us. We got more in store.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
John, so talking about getting Americans out of Gaza, President Biden said, I want to thank our partners in the region and particularly Qatar. The leader of Hamas lives in Qatar. So why is President Biden thanking them for anything?
Yeah.
Oh, geez, Peter. Let's take a step back here and look at this. Qatar, they
are a terrorist group that killed Americans and kidnapped Americans within the last month.
Peter, Qatar has been helpful in getting those Americans out. I'm sure you would agree with me, and everybody at your network would agree, that getting American hostages out is a good thing. And Qatar was a key player.
That's not the question, John.
Qatar has lines of communication with Hamas that almost nobody else has. Now, I'm not saying that we support Hamas. Of course we don't. They're a terrorist organization. And Israel has an absolute right to go after them. But Qatar has lines of communication that not everybody else has. And it would be irresponsible. In fact, I would expect that you and everybody else in here would be going after me if we weren't doing everything we could and having every possible conversation we can have to get Americans that are held hostage back home with their families. If we weren't doing that, it would be diplomatic malpractice.
Oh my gosh, the grandstanding. I mean, and we all like getting the hostages out, am I right? I mean, you know, Kane, I mean, we love getting the hostages out there. I mean, do you hate that?
We can all agree on that, can't we?
Do you hate getting the hostages out? What does it have to do with what Peter Ducey just asked him? Welcome back to the program. Dina Lash with you, bottom of this third hour. What does that have to do with what was just asked? I don't want to dislike John Kirby. I want to have someone that I kind of like involved in the administration at all whatsoever, because they need to have that belief that if it all goes to hell, there's at least one person in the administration who isn't a total walking garbage can. I mean, the leaders of Hamas live in Qatar. If Qatar wanted to be truly helpful, why wouldn't they just be like, why didn't they just kill the leaders of Hamas or let us do it? You know, this could all be over real quick. We can do it the easy way, or we can do it the real easy way. You know, I mean, it just seems like it's a simple question, right? I don't know. Did you guys see? Boy, oh boy. I'm going to try not to get wound up on this one. Did y'all see the editorial? Is it USA Today? Pulling it up. I have it up, actually. I have 1,011,000 windows up. Why? I have a 4.5-foot wide screen. Why? I don't know if you saw it, but they had this story. Editorial by Hunter Biden. I first saw it from Brian. This is mean of me. Potato. Brian Stelter. Hunter Biden said, quote, "What troubles me is the demonization of addiction, of human frailty, using me as its avatar, and the devastating consequences it has for the millions struggling with addiction, desperate for a way out, being bombarded by the denigrating and near constant coverage of me and my addiction on Fox News." Because, see, everybody but Hunter Biden should have consequences, except for him. Everyone but him should have consequences for lying on a 4473. Oh my gosh. Don't you dare talk about Hunter Biden enriching himself off the CCP at the expense of national security, engaging in human trafficking, violating gun laws, violating the FARA Act. You're demonizing his coke addiction. How darest thou? This is the oh my gosh. He literally, this published today. Oh my gosh, the headline. Kane, I need something. I need a stress doll, the one where its eyes bulge out. Note to self, stress doll. Hunter Biden, I fought to get sober. Political weaponization of my addiction hurts more than me. He wrote that. My struggles and my mistakes have been fodder for a violent sustain. He's mad about the criticisms against his family. This is, let me read it to you. Today in Hunter Biden, my grandma's afternoon stories. So he writes this. Over 4 years ago, I chose a life over the slow, strangled death grip of addiction, which in my case consisted of each day of a bottle of vodka and as many hits on a crack pipe as possible. I'm prouder of that choice and of my recovery than anything I've done. My family. Oh, and then he gets into my struggles and my mistakes have been fodder for a violent, sustained disinformation campaign against my father and an all-out annihilation of my reputation through high-pitched but fruitless congressional investigations. Well, they're still ongoing there, champ. And more recently, criminal charges for possessing an unloaded gun for 11 days 5 years ago. Charges that appear to be the first ever of their kind brought in the history of Delaware. But he says you're denigrating addiction. What, you're demonizing addiction and human frailty by using me as its avatar. That's what he's writing here. Can I just go back to the one? I mean, he only, as a drug addict, illegally possessed a gun for 11 days. I mean, only. Probably blew cocaine off it. I don't know.
I thought it got
snorted cocaine
off
it. What?
I thought he got rid of it.
Oh, yeah. His sister-in-law lover threw it in a trash can across the street from an elementary school. Golly. He is saying that you can't criticize him because my crimes that I committed are the same thing as the addiction. If you denigrate me, you're denigrating addiction. That is the worst logic ever. Do you know why it's the worst logic ever? Because he's exploiting addiction to dodge accountability for his crimes. I've known addicts. I've had addicts in my family. Not all addicts sell out their country to the Communist Chinese Party to enrich themselves. And not all criminals are addicts. He chose to do that. And now he's going to try to say that you can't hold him accountable or criticize him for it because of his addiction. I wouldn't be surprised if his logic is maybe I should try to avoid more accountability by keep doing the drugs. That way, I'm an addict. You're denigrating my addiction. Instead of in the past tense, make it current. I mean, I've heard some stuff before. Isn't that like one of the first steps of recovery is to accept responsibility for the actions you choose to make? I mean, it seemed like, and someone else made this point, he didn't really show any interest in getting sober until the fit, as they would say, hit the shan. Right?
Yeah.
You can't talk about how he violated the Foreign Agents Registration Act. His addiction, though. You can't talk about him being illegally in possession of a firearm. He only had it for 11 days 5 years ago. I mean, come on. Meh. Jiminy Christmas. I am pretty amazed. He actually wrote this whole entire editorial about that. But he just admitted to a crime. He admitted to all these crimes in the city. What a stupid moron. I mean, goodness. And then he tried to get into his mom's suicide. What? I thought she was killing. I guess she ran on purpose with her kids in the car in front of a oncoming truck. Interesting. Because, see, remember how Joe Biden went around and was saying that his wife was killed by a drunk driver and the guy wasn't drunk at all? His wife just didn't stop at a stop sign? Huh. He gets mad and says that people posted altered nude photos of him. What, was he good looking before? Did they just make them ugly? Like, I don't understand. Like, what? Did they Photoshop clothes off of him? That all came off his laptop. The FBI confirmed it was his. Oh my gosh, he hits everything. He hits about his brother. He goes into everything. Like, all of these things are why you should not hold me accountable for any of the crimes that I chose to commit. Because of the drugs. That's why. I think what he's doing actually sets back addiction and people who are trying to deal with addiction. That's what he's doing, because he's saying that you can do whatever you want. If you're an addict, you got to get out of jail free card. There's no expectation of accountability. And recovery starts with that. I think him using addiction as a get out of jail free card sets that recovery back for everybody else. And it makes everybody else look suspect. Like I said, I've known addicts. I've had addicts in my family. Not every criminal is an addict. And not every addict goes out and sells out national security or does the crazy stuff that he did, engages in human trafficking, does all these things. Not every addict does that. He is just a privileged, aging brat who thinks that he is still in his 20s and that he can do whatever he wants because daddy's the president. Hunter Biden is a privileged white trash brat in an almost 60-year-old's body. It is insane that he is coddled and treated like a child in this manner. I mean, obviously the whole family has issues, because the whole family, from Joe to, honestly, I think Jill has issues too. I mean, how do you have all of these kids that come from the same family and two different women, and they're all messed up? They all have issues. They all are addicted to drugs, or they have daddy issues or something. Like, maybe be parents. It felt like Joe and Jill were chasing, you know, political dreams instead of raising their damn kids. And now look at it. That's just shameful. Absolutely shameful. And then it's like they should have spent more time with their kids. I don't know. That just makes me angry. And there are a lot of you out there who are listening who are like, you know what? I'm sober this many years and I would have never done this. Because what he's doing is like he's impugning the character of everybody. And I also think he calls into question reconciliation by refusing any kind of accountability or even acknowledging his culpability in this. He acts like everybody invented these crimes and assigned them to him. You did this yourself. And you know what? According to everything that has ever been written about him, this dude had issues before he was even on drugs. He was a spoiled little brat. Like, the only reason that apparently, I don't know if he's privileged. I don't think because his parents cared. I think he's privileged because they had to keep up appearances. And there's a big difference. That's why you got some people that have serious problems and they look like they come from everything. Because the parents don't do it with a compassionate heart. They do it because they want to keep up appearances. And it feels like that's what this family did. That doesn't excuse him from his choices either. He's an entitled brat.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every time they want to address U.S. support to Israel, the White House pivots to Islamophobia. Is that an accurate assessment? How would you respond to that?
I'll let them speak to their opinion of our work. I can tell you that this strategy is born from a genuine desire to go after the kind of hate in America that could lead to real threats of violence against real
Jews.
People.
But we're doing Islam.
Our fellow citizens who are of the Muslim faith or in the Arab community and Palestinian community. I mean, that comes from a genuine, instinctual place for the president and for the vice president.
I mean, you know, the kind of hate that we're seeing you know, against the Jews, but we just decided, Cain, you know, to do Islam, as you've seen, such as. Welcome back to the show. Oh my gosh. This is why I could not be a reporter in the press pool. I would be thrown out on the every day, on the daily. I'd be tossed out and then I'd be banned. There's no way. So you're telling, because you know, the hate, like with the Jews, John, is that what you're telling us? Is that what you're saying? when they say from the river to the sea, are they talking about getting rid of black people and Muslims? Is that what they're talking about, John? Talk about getting rid of Muslims? Doesn't sound like that. They touched up the BLM mural in D.C. Yeah, do you know that? Because, you know, because there's so much hatred in the world right now, King. So much hatred. It's very important that we make the people who have been defending Hamas know that it's, and I'm specifically talking about those people, that it's okay. It's nothing to fear. What a backwards. So you're telling me, John, that there are Jews being attacked in college campuses around the country, businesses, people are being targeted, riots outside of Israeli embassies in multiple countries, John. But Islamophobia, you feel, is what we need to tackle. Is that correct? That's the follow-up I would have. Maybe I could go in disguise. See, I could just wear different disguises every day. And then be like, no, I'm not. I am John Schmidt. John J. Schmidt. Jingleheimer. That's right. I'm a new reporter asking questions. All right, today in stupidity.
It is John Kirby. He was asked about...
I knew it.
Last night, Biden, at a, you know, this fundraiser, he bizarrely claimed that he convinced Bibi to call for a ceasefire. This was the question.
Oh, for the love.
But I just want to be fully clear that, so when the president said last night that he convinced Prime Minister Netanyahu to do a ceasefire, he was referring to the two Americans that got out. But Israel has never acknowledged that they paused. So can you give us a better understanding of what exactly was paused? And if the understanding is that for every sort of hostage release, there would be a pause.
Well, we're running out of time, but he essentially walks that whole
pauses
thing back.
You know, it's not not a ceasefire, it's a pause on the fire. So a not a ceasing, it's, you know, we're asking for a pause, you know, a beat, if you will. Folks, find us at YouTube, Facebook, like and subscribe. Back with you tomorrow.